This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we welcome Arsalan Ahmed, CEO of HSBC Amanah Malaysia. Now, HSBC was the first foreign bank in Malaysia to launch Islamic banking, setting up an Islamic finance window here back in 1994. Good morning, Oz, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me this morning.
Now, Oz, let's start with some recent news here. We've got this story by Reuters saying that the Hong Kong-based insurer FWD Group has agreed to buy HSBC's 49% stake in HSBC Amanah Takaful. Can you comment or perhaps even confirm this report?
Well, this is a sister company, so I'm not purview to the details of that of the specific transaction. The public information is that HSBC is looking to sell HSBC Amanah Takaful. It's an ongoing discussion. As such, it is market sensitive, so I can't really say much more than that.
Well, so what happens to your offerings then once this stake is sold off?
Well, look, so we will continue to make sure that we have providers of Takaful services that meet the customers that we have in HSBC Amanah. So that will continue to progress in that way.
But if the potential for Takaful here in Malaysia, if that's evident, why exit then?
Well, we need to take a step back into history a little bit on this when we're talking about Takaful. There was a regulatory change a few years ago where there was a splitting of a license. So there was a combined license historically given. We were one of the first banks to get that.
Between life and general, right?
Yes, that's right. So there's a splitting of the license. Now, in order to kind of split the license up, and there was, I think, 100 million ringgits that was required to invest into a general Takaful business. And this was at a time where HSBC, as a group, historically, was defocusing on insurance. So that kind of prompted activity within the market. And, of course, there is, within the Takaful space, a requirement for a certain amount of local ownership. That sometimes has dynamics, positive and negatives. The positives are, you know, you kind of have a local partner to work with. The negatives are that, you kind of have to bring everyone on board on decisions that are made. And sometimes when you have a plurality of views, it does require more time to make decisions and be more agile in the market. But the main point here is the splitting of the licensing, the requirement of heavy investments at a time when HSBC as a group was moving away from insurance, necessitated the position that we're in today.
Not just perhaps moving away from Takaful, but also perhaps paring down its presence in the Islamic finance sector as well. We note that in 2012, HSBC shut down all its Amanah branches around the world, except for Malaysia, Saudi Arabia, and Indonesia. So, you know, is this trend to be expected moving forward as well?
So it is important to note that from an Islamic finance point of view, regulation and the ability to offer full-fledged offerings actually at the time in 2012 was limited to a few sites. So you have to match the ability to say, well, if I'm going to invest, I can offer all the products and services that HSBC Group can offer in a Sharia-compliant format, and I'm able to do that to a market that's, you know, substantially growing and there's high amount of demand within the customer segments that we work in. In 2012, that wasn't the case. So yes, so when we look at it from a revenue perspective and size perspective, we kept more than 80% of what we were doing under HSBC Amanah globally. And it's absolutely right to keep what we were doing in Saudi Arabia and Malaysia. If we take Malaysia, we were the first foreign bank to have a window in 1994, the first foreign bank to invest in a subsidiary in 2000, and well, we got approved in 2007, but we started operations in 2008. And in that space, we today have, you know, 26 branches, which is the largest number of branches amongst any Islamic banking subsidiary. So a huge amount of commitment there. But what Malaysia allows the group to do is to have a full-fledged offering of Islamic finance. In 2012, that really wasn't the case. And even if we look at Indonesia now, we can see the waves of change coming in Indonesia in terms of focusing more on Islamic finance. But again, they're probably where Malaysia was about 10 years ago in terms of that genesis. So we have to look at it from that lens as well.
You've had a great start to 2018. First half saw your income doubled on year to over 360 million ringgit. What was behind that growth?
I think that what we have been doing is looking at how we take not just great products and services that are universally acceptable to anybody, say, for example, in our retail space, who walks into our retail branch, that anybody, whomsoever they are, whatsoever their persuasion is, they have a great product and service. That's there. What we're also doing is looking at targeting areas that is accretive to our presence within the country. So we're not looking at saying, well, look, this is a cannibalization effect. No, we're looking at how can we be accretive to affinity customers or locations where we're underserved generally as a group. So because we have this synergistic relationship, we're able to kind of leverage that grow and focus. So that's what we've been doing.
But is there enough growth potential there for both HSBC Bank and HSBC Amana without being, like you said, cannibalistic? Because as it stands, 26 branches of over 60 branches there, right? Would that ratio be massaged moving forward?
So there's 68 branches we have in country, 42 are conventional and 26 are Islamic. Now, I think the question is that how do we reach more customers effectively? And that very much will have to be around leveraging digital. And that's really the way, if you look at the investment, that's kind of where you put the investment to leverage getting to more people to be able to offer the products and services that they'll turn around and say, well, you know, HSBC uniquely does this. So that's going to be more the focus. And the truth is that there is a high level of affinity customers for Islamic finance within Malaysia. And HSBC Amana has more of a resonance with those customers. And the way the channel we get to them may not necessarily be new branches, but it certainly could be through digital. And HSBC Group is looking by 2020 to invest $15 to $17 billion globally into technology. Now, there's not a lot of people who can say that. And naturally, as what is called a scale site within HSBC, so there's 8 geographies that are scale sites, which Malaysia is one of them, we're naturally an area, a place that will benefit from the developments and investments that we have in the group.
With the catalysts, digitization and fintech, etc., can it maintain this kind of growth momentum again, or doubling on year? Or what's your growth outlook here?
I can't really make forward-looking statements, but what I'd like to see the bank do is continue on its trajectory that we've been seeing over the last couple of years. We think there's a huge amount of untapped potential within Islamic finance. We are a leader in the country in terms of product innovation and thought leadership. So it's what we call a right to win to grow this business. And we see there a lot of potential for customers who are currently not banking with us. HSBC is seen as an aspirational brand. But you know what? It's an aspirational brand that absolutely anybody can, you know, benefit from. And we want to reach as many people as we can.
It's not just you who is seeing that potential there. HSBC Amana is one of 16 licensed Islamic banks here in Malaysia. Give us a sense of your market share right now.
So in terms of assets, our market share is 3%. So if we look at in terms of market share from international or foreign banks, that's the largest that there is. Now, clearly, you know, Maybank is obviously the largest, and we have the other local banks that are very big. So that's kind of where we're positioned in terms of market share.
How do you plan to grow that market share then?
So just to link it back to the group strategy, we are considered what is called a scale site. What does that mean? What that means is that we don't just want to be a great international bank. We want to be able to compete domestically. So what that means is to be going after market share. And we do want to increase our market share and be more of a domestic player.
Is 16 too many players in Malaysia, you think?
So when we look at any type of dominance hierarchy, we need to understand that that creates a competitive landscape. Now, HSBC Amana, in terms of product offering and thought leadership, certainly is high up in the dominance hierarchy. So when I look at the market, I'm not necessarily thinking about how many people there are and what they're doing. I'm thinking about what are great products and services that meet people's needs, that help people and companies reach their aspirations. How can we meet those from a banking perspective and also make the customer experience such that this builds a trusting relationship? So when I look at if they're 16 and what they're doing, that's not what's bothering me. What's bothering me is what are we doing to make sure people understand that we can help them in where they find themselves in terms of financial services needs. Mm. So that's how I look at it. The way that we look at it is, how high up in the dominance hierarchy are we? And HSBC Amana has to continue to do that through product innovation and customer experience.
Now, Oz, we've got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Malaysia's growth and positioning as a hub for Islamic finance. I'm speaking to Arsalan Ahmed, CEO of HSBC Amana Malaysia. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me is Arsalan Ahmed, CEO of HSBC Amana Malaysia. Now, Oz, in the first half, we spoke about HSBC Amana's positioning here in Malaysia and its growth strategies. Let's kind of zoom out and talk about Malaysia as a whole, because with the previous government, they certainly championed the growth of Malaysia as a hub for Islamic finance. Have you had much engagement with the current government or even the new central bank governor? And what is your sense about their push on that front?
Well, it's absolutely correct to say that over a long period of time, Malaysia has supported Islamic finance and the growth of Islamic finance. Now, since the change in government, actually, we don't see anything changing other than continued support for Islamic finance. I don't think anyone has spoken specifically about it as yet, but we haven't seen any through action, no change. But I think that that's normal and logical. So let's put it into context from a Malaysia perspective. Now, Malaysia certainly within the region is a hub for financial services. I mean, the capital markets is one of the largest and deepest within the region. And that's taking into context large players like Japan and so on and so forth. But where is it ahead of everybody? Well, that's Islamic finance, and that's not in the region, that's globally. So actually, that differentiating factor that Malaysia has in financial services itself is in Islamic finance. So actually, I would say that that very much is a national treasure and is a national agenda. So without any specific statements having been made that I'm aware of since the change of government with regards to Islamic finance, it's natural to assume that there will be a continued push to grow that grow Islamic finance. Of course, the current governor was, when at the IMF, leading the IMF discussions around Islamic finance, so he's very well aware of the subject matter and has been a firm supporter historically.
Well, but what we have heard from the government of the day is that they want to keep Malaysia's debt levels in check. Now, HSBC Amana, you guys have arranged all of the Malaysian government's sovereign sukuk since its first issuance back in 2002. So with these kind of statements, these kind of signals coming out of the government, what does that mean for HSBC Amana then? Less business?
Well, look, I think there's a couple of things if we unpack that. One is generally using debt to stir consumption, and how does that then impact the banking operations, banking industry as a whole? That's point number one. Point number two is, what does that mean around future issuances of sukuk from the government? So what we can certainly say is that there is a clear direction around reduction in debt levels. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all consumption will go down. In fact, what we can see is that there still is investment coming into Malaysia to develop Malaysia. And obviously, HSBC being an international bank, look, we're in 67 countries. We're kind of covered 90% of GDP and trade. So we're there to connect things going in and going out from Malaysia. So that's a key part of what we do. So certainly, we see that continuing to happen. Then we're talking about the local demand. Areas of strength that we have had are, for example, in supporting projects and infrastructure, so on and so forth. But look, for HSBC Amana, 60% of our revenues is from the retail business. So, retail consumption is kind of what we look at. We look at that's kind of continuing. There is outlooks to moderate, that the GDP will moderate. But look, when you're talking about kind of around 5%, slightly below, slightly above, those are still good numbers in terms of GDP growth. Is there an overall slowdown or pause as we see what specific areas the new government will invest in after they have looked and reviewed what's currently being done? Yes, that's likely to be true. But that doesn't speak to necessarily all consumption radically moving down. And I think that that's just important to keep into context. For example, the government has continued investment in some of the projects that were going on before they were in power.
Yeah, but at the same time, we have seen, for example, mega projects, mega infrastructure projects being reviewed or put on the shelf for a while. So if that accounts for about 40% of your business, is there enough demand on the retail side to go beyond that 60% share?
So in that 40%, we're obviously, we have SME businesses, mid-size, and large corporate. And then we do some business international using HSBC Amana as a hub for Islamic finance for other group sites.
So what's the public sector share then for Malaysia?
Yeah, you're going to catch me off guard with that one. But overall, with what is happening in terms of kind of review of large projects, taking that into consideration and also our plans for growth that were here, that were with us over a year ago, we don't see us slowing down.
Okay, kind of broaden it out beyond the sovereign space then. Talk to us about the supply and demand dynamics that you're seeing when it comes to Islamic bonds. What's the outlook there?
So Islamic, so overall in terms of Sukuk issuances, obviously they've been lower in the last 12 months than the previous 12 months. So,
but it was a record year last year.
Yeah, well, so we have to note that from a global perspective, there was a lull. And then it kind of went back. It was a record year. But if you look at it across a time period, it's above. But there were years that were close because there was a natural lull. But that was a function of the bond market generally internationally being the same. Mm-hmm. If we look within Malaysia, it is certainly slower this year. Having said that, for the Sukuk market, it still represents the majority of the outstandings and the majority of the new issuances that come to market. Mm-hmm. So is there, if you're not going to be doing or you're reviewing large infrastructure projects, which typically have a capital markets element to it, then, yeah, there's going to be a slowdown. But there is still activity within the market, and we expect the activity to continue. But these are, I think it's very important to note that these are peaks and troughs in an otherwise strong current. And I think that's an important thing to note.
Looking at Malaysia's position on the global stage there, we know that Malaysia's market share of the global Sukuk scene is about 40%, 40 plus percent. Can we maintain that position, you think? Because we have seen, for example, last year, the Gulf countries really ramp up their issuances because of the drop in oil prices.
That's
there,
right?
But in terms of the market share for Malaysia, can we maintain that status as market leader?
The market share question is one around maintaining a relevant market share, but the more important question is, what is it made up of? So it is very important that Malaysia kind of acknowledges that it is just far ahead of everybody when it comes to Sukuk. It's not just about the Sukuk structures, which it is. It's about the types of Sukuk, unrated, capital related, so on and so forth. It is the number of currencies that Sukuk is done from Malaysia. That's not just typically a US dollar or local currency. There's Khazanah's done in renminbi and so on and so forth. And it's also the fact that it has supporting institutions such as rating agencies and so on and so forth around it. So when we talk about Sukuk generally, we shouldn't just look at it from the point of view of what's the percentage. We have to look at it from that point of view. And in a wider context, the majority, imagine this, I mean, Malaysia is a center of financial services within the region. And as part of that, the majority of the capital markets is in Sharia-compliant format. When you add all those things together, I think we don't have to worry about those spikes that happen because of these large mega issuances that come out of some Gulf countries and then maybe makes the percentage smaller. I just think that that's a... That's not something to focus on.
So that's not the right optics then?
No, absolutely not.
Interesting to note. But still, leveraging on the overall current that you mentioned earlier when it comes to the Sukuk market, we understand you've just announced the world's first sustainable development goal, Sukuk.
So we are looking, we've sent an announcement out, this is public, that we are considering a transaction. for in Malaysian ringgit for Sukuk for HSBC Amana.
In ringgit?
In ringgit, yeah. Now, what we've done is that we have adopted a group framework on sustainable development goals. And that was a framework that was set up last year, and the group was the first to issue a sustainable development goal bond. What we've done to support the group's commitments on sustainability, and those are quite material commitments, we've adopted that framework and applied it to our next issuance. It just so happens that our next issuance we're looking to do, subject to market conditions, is potentially, and that's why we have the announcement, potentially this month.
Now, you spent years serving HSBC, not just in Asia, also in the Middle East and Europe, and you were also with Qatar's Barwa Bank for about 3 years since 2013, I believe. So talk to us about the contrast between, say, the Malaysian Islamic finance scene versus that in the Middle East, Europe, and the rest of Asia. What's unique about this?
So there are differences in the models that we look at. So, for example, in Qatar, you can only have a conventional bank or an Islamic bank. That's a way to do it. In other jurisdictions, you can have windows or you can have subsidiaries as well. What you have in Malaysia in terms of structure is that you can basically have any of those, and that's kind of fostering the growth. And these things come with their pros and cons, but the Malaysia approach to kind of saying, well, you can have a window, you can have a subsidiary. Actually, you can have takaful entities and asset management. And then when you look at Malaysia's structured approach into incentivizing the growth of Islamic finance, in terms of making it universal that Islamic finance is not necessarily for one particular group of people. When we look at in terms of using Islamic finance as a way to differentiate, there is just so much that Malaysia has done and they're just far away from the next competitor. If we look at the UAE, they're currently looking at putting together some Islamic finance regulation. They're looking to take on IOFI standards, but the framework that they're looking at is Malaysia. And guess who else did that? Oman. And that's just a wonderful thing because people are not cited because there's a group of players who go and help and educate, and a great number of the Malaysian diaspora have gone out to the Middle East to help set that up. And I just think that that is such a strong indication of leadership. And I think sometimes, and I think it bothers me personally, oddly, and I'm not Malaysian, but that sometimes we say, oh, you know, are we losing our luster in Islamic finance because this number has gone down? So, yeah, those are the differences. I think that all of the activities in the Middle East and other places are very laudable. I think, for example, the UK and Hong Kong as well have really look to encompass and support Islamic finance as financial centres you'd naturally want to, and there's some great things that they've done. But I just think when you look at it from a complete picture, Malaysia is far and away above. I think that there is a greater plurality of views, and that has helped us to come to conclusions that lead to progress and growth of the industry.
Thank you very much for your time and your insights. I've been speaking to Arsalan Ahmed, CEO of HSBC Amanah Malaysia. Now, Oz will be speaking at the Global Islamic Finance Forum 2018. That's happening on the 3rd to 4th of October right here in KL. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.